team, we're really excited about this podcast. Over the next 60 minutes, and again, listen to it at 1.5 speed. I really like doing that. It helps me get through a lot of content really quickly. Not for everybody, but over the next 60 minutes, we are going to be diving into 9 universal near truths. Whoa, that's a mouthful. So what do I mean by that? Universal means these apply to anybody. Near truths means they're well studied, but we can never say it's fully the truth because science is always evolving. So these are 9 things that you can do to radically improve your life right away. They are big rocks. And we think that if you're not doing all of them, you should pick one that you can add to your routine. If you're doing all of them, great, you get a gold star. If you're not doing any of them, no problem. You're here, you're taking this seriously. So lean into it and let's get one of them going. All right, what's up, guys?
Hello, everyone.
It is Bachelor in Paradise tonight. Second last episode, and yeah. I have no shame. I'm so excited.
It's like everybody has some sort of like reality show that's really bad, but they can't help but love it and watch it. So
there's an amazing couple that does parodies on Instagram of couples and the stuff that we all go through. What are they called? Alex and John,
but I can't remember her actual page. It's like her Alex and her last name, so I'll have to figure it out.
But there's this amazing episode where she talks about how every dude, or at least one person in the relationship, when the other puts a reality TV show on, they're like, no, I'm not interested, it's fine. And then the other person or the wife is typically like, well, why don't I just bring you up to speed with what's been going on? And then the guy's like, no, like, seriously, I don't care.
I'm not that interested.
And then the guy's like on the couch on his laptop, like just peering over increasingly at this captivating, greasy show. And she continues to say, well, and he continues to ask questions. Why isn't she doing that? Why isn't she doing? And then the wife's like, let's just start from the beginning. He's like, no, I don't care. And then by the end, he's completely converted. And that's exactly where I'm at. And it's, like I say, I have no shame about this.
Yeah. It's, he was the one who yelled from the other room today how excited he was that it was on tonight. So,
yeah, it's amazing people watching. But, you know, it's one of those shows. It's about 8 o'clock and we just had our dinner. It's 7 o'clock. We just had our dinner, yeah. And which was a delicious chicken noodle soup.
Yeah, no noodles.
And
chicken soup, sans
noodles.
All I
can think about is my ice cream later, which we don't have. We have 90 calorie fudgesicles.
Yeah. We always have like a treat while we're watching our show. So we are normal people too. But, you know, we try not to stay up too late. This show is going to cause us to stay up a little bit later. Because it's actually really long and there's a lot of commercial breaks because we're watching it pretty much live. So it's on until 10. So it's a later night for us. So we don't want to be snacking the whole way through, but we will have something at the very beginning.
But anyways,
the
point of my story here is that, this stuff brings out the worst in us. And that sort of inspired me to write this article on LinkedIn today.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit about that because it just came out today. It's getting a lot of good responses and it's hit home on the most important universal truths.
It's actually called the 9 universal near truths. And what's not significant is the number 9. That's just how many things I felt were really relevant to share. Mm-hmm. What is significant is the universal aspect of things and near truth. So just to give you guys some background, universal in this context means it can apply to anybody. So regardless of you being, regardless of sex, regardless of age, regardless of training background, regardless of what diet you're on, or if you subscribe to vegan or paleo or whatever, all these things are true to a degree. I call them near truths. And the reason I say that is because it's not fair for us to say this is fact. Science continues to change. We continue to learn more. And we are always in that process of learning and getting closer to the truth. But you can never say that it's the truth because there's always another degree of learning that we can go through and data that we can analyze. So I think it's inappropriate to say truths, but these 9 things, the evidence has been for some time converging on them to give us some good guidance as to how we can become healthier in life and at work and perform better at work. And so, yeah, we wanted to share them because sometimes, we encounter these things a lot with people and we get a lot of the same questions. So maybe this will help us clear a few things up.
And you might be surprised to hear that protein is not one of those things.
It's not. It could have been. I was going to, but it
could have been number 10 if we really wanted it to be.
My goal was to talk a little bit about, or in subsequent weeks, dig deeper on each of these for people. And so I was like, how do I fit protein in here?
Well, one of the categories is food related for sure. And of course, if you wanted to get broad on that, then yeah, I would include it. But yeah. I just thought it was funny because people probably expect one of the first things to be that, but it's not. But number one is not surprising either. What's number one?
Yeah. And you know what? The reason we're doing the podcast is so that I actually can go deeper on this so that you guys have in 40 minutes or less, like some details on each of these nine things. So we can address how protein relates to number one and later in the list. So number one is strength training is the most beneficial form of exercise you can do to improve your health. So specifically, I go on to say that this is not to say that other forms of exercise are bad. Absolutely not the case. All exercise is better than no exercise. All movement is better than sitting on the couch. There are times to sit on the couch, but certainly if we're sedentary, we want to address that. But when we, if we were to look at the week and we were to say, I have 1 hour to train, what should I do to have the best health outcomes for myself? It would be strength training. And I think what we're going to see in the coming years is that the governing bodies, so the government, health associations will be advocating most loudly for strength training, for increasing health span, so living good life or living well long into our years, reversing or slowing aging, reversing obesity, all these sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think what's even also surprising is if you look at the newer literature and science regarding pregnant women, strength training is also mentioned a lot more probably than it used to be, because you can still look up some things. You know, as personal trainers, we do try to keep up to date with the ways that we can help all of our members. And if a member is pregnant, then they might be changing the way that they're training, especially trimester over trimester. But what I've happened to fall upon before was them recommending that you'd lift no more than 10 pounds or 10 kilos. And they basically vary from article to article of what they say you shouldn't pick up, which is so confusing because from person to person, 10 pounds to 20 pounds to whatever, it's just, it's so variable depending on where you started from. So that kind of
Recommendation.
Yeah. Just, it doesn't make sense. And then it scares people because they read an article just by that top one that comes up on the Google search and then they believe it to be true.
Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense because it's all relative to you, for sure. Yeah, so why is strength training the best, right? Well, there's a long, long list and we'll address as many as we can. I mean, the first one is that strength training is the most potent stimulator for muscle growth. So we talk about protein a lot and you need protein, and certainly having protein in your diet is going to increase or elevate your nitrogen balance, which allows protein metabolism to take place. But the most potent stimulus to tell your body to build muscle is strength training. Why is muscle important? Well, muscle is important for many reasons, including locomotion. We want to be able to navigate the world, whether we are young, middle-aged, or elderly. It's funny, when you look at personal training clients and those who have trained a plethora of different people, it's known that those who have the most profound, obvious results are those who are later in their years, because you move from being a semi-dependent or dependent state into becoming a more independent state, being able to all of a sudden walk up the stairs, get off the couch, go to the washroom on your own. When you start training the body to become stronger through strength training, even in the elderly years, you start to regain some of this independence, right? And it's that independence that can increase health span. So certainly strength is very important. And we know that in the data, it often shows that grip strength is a predictor of longevity. And does that mean that we should all go start doing grip strength exercises? No, that's a proxy. That's just a measurement they're using to evaluate one's strength.
Not unless you're trying to pick up a cast iron pan, because I can't for the life of me figure out why that's still so difficult. I think
we should
it's
get
just,
pans in the studio, cast iron pans. That should be
it's
like
ridiculous
our next
though. I'm like, okay, I have days at F45 where my grip strength hurts, obviously, like when we are using mostly dumbbells all day. But like, this is next level. It must just be the way the weight is distributed, because my wrist is like, I try to carry it over and pour some sauce out of it, and I'm like, oh my God, my wrist is gonna
break.
And
it's burning hot too sometimes. So you're like, it's only a matter of time before this gets to the oven mitt.
So if you're basing it off of that, it might be confusing.
So totally. We'll put a request into HQ to ask for some frying pans in the next and some cast iron
specifically, because yeah, they're ridiculously heavy.
They can go with our sledgehammers. Yeah. Why else is strength training important? Because like I mentioned, it's going to promote muscle mass, and more muscle mass beyond locomotion helps us manage our metabolism. So we become a more metabolically active individual. We become more insulin sensitive. It helps us manage our blood sugar, not just our performance through managing energy highs and lows, but also making us more insulin sensitive, which we know will improve all cause or reduce all cause mortality in the onset of type 2 diabetes. So another reason why strength training is so important. And another reason, I'll give you a third, and there's many more, and maybe Andy, you have some to complement this list. Mm. I guess injury prevention should be there as well, but because that's what happens with the elderly, right? They slip and fall, and it's not so much a balance thing as it is a strength gap. Mm-hmm. But this third one is cognition. So we know, and you guys all know this, when you're working out in the gym and you're focused and you're concentrating on contraction, that's a conversation that's happening between your mind, your nervous system, and your muscles. And when we think about diseases like Alzheimer's that set in as we age, what's one of the methods that we talk a lot about, holding off the effects of Alzheimer's? Keeping yourself sharp, staying in the workforce. Don't use it, you lose it. And so strength training actually has you having that mind-to-muscle connection conversation often, and that helps us stay mentally sharp. It improves our cognition.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think about aging or being like a lot older, I also think about, you know, being frail and hunched over. So we know as well, like sarcopenia is a huge risk for
muscle
the elderly.
Wasting. Yeah.
As well, and this actually starts in your 30s. So 1% every year, little reduction. So if you're able,
if you do nothing,
if you are able to combat that with strength training, with eating the right amounts of protein and collagen, and obviously this strengthens your bones and keeps your skeleton upright. So I just think of being able to stand taller and not feel hunched over, and just feeling that you're not. You know, you don't have those aches and pains, and you just feel like, yeah, you can carry your own groceries in. You can still walk up the stairs. Like, that's what I think about.
Right. And so the take-home point here, guys, you know, what are the snackable bites that you can take away? Strength training should be at the foundation of your program, right? Now, hopefully most of us have more than an hour to work out in a week. Maybe it's a bunch of 30-minute windows. So start with strength training, then build around that. Build your cardio activities, your bar, your yoga, your spinning, your high-intensity interval training workouts. Build around that strength training foundation, because that is the key.
I want to mention quickly, like, yoga, bar, Pilates, like they can be reminiscent of strength training. Obviously your muscles can fatigue. There's like, you know, especially like when you're working on very intricate muscles, because that's what bar and Pilates does specifically. So there is some strength training component there. So we're not saying that it's not worth right. your time, or that it doesn't have the
I don't know what you're trying to say with reminiscent. That's like a memory thing. It's late in the day.
Yeah, it is a little bit.
You need to do some strength training. Get your cognition going.
Yeah, I didn't do that today. So anyways, it is very similar to that type of feeling. You're going to get a muscular burn, but being under load is a different thing. So those are body weight exercises. They are really good for understanding your body in space and training stabilizer, intricate muscles, deeper muscles, but being under load is a different thing.
I wonder if they can hear that I'm playing Fetch with Bowie, because of course, as you guys know us, if you've been listening to us, our little fur baby here likes to bother us when we're trying to educate.
We're in an area that she knows is kind of a play area though too, so it's not her fault. Sit upstairs and she usually plays up here too.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. So maintaining quality social connections appears to be the number one, I say it again, the number one predictor of longevity and quality of life. And I put a little equation in my article that says, and this is a Justin Baker equation, maybe it's quoted elsewhere, but it's patent pending, longevity plus quality of life equals health span. And health span is defined in the literature, I guess I could say the literature, at least in its common knowledge, as not just living long, but living well late into your years. Because living long but suffering for a prolonged period of time is not what, I don't think any of us want that.
No.
And so when they look at, when you look at the research, you look at the literature that's been done, the meta-analyses that have been done on blue zones, so those areas of the world where people live well past 100, one of the common denominators is the quality of relationships. And we've heard death by broken heart or loneliness, or we've seen trends where when one partner of a long-term marriage passes, sometimes, unfortunately, the other partner's soon to go after. You know, I don't know what the scientific explanation for this is, but we know that the psychology can affect physiology. Mm-hmm. And it seems that, you know, having these healthy relationships help us have meaning in life. They keep us going. They give us a reason to get up in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, having a community, whatever that might be, that could be a church community, obviously that could be a gym community, and or just being really in touch with your family. And some people see their family once a week, which is great. I mean, if you're close enough, you know, do that. But otherwise, make a point of being able to reach out and see friends and family, knowing that at one point, and I know we all go through this because I feel like, oh man, every weekend you have something to do, or mm-hmm. you feel like you're spread too thin. But really when it comes down to it, you do feel better after you see these people. They give you, you know, this positivity or this energy, and you know, you're laughing. You think about
seeing Paul and Amanda this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Easy to say no, right? It was a Sunday afternoon, football's on.
Yeah.
You know, you're in your sweatpants.
Totally. It's like, oh, maybe we'll reschedule again. But, you know, there's not many times where you're going to regret going to see friends or family that are in your close circle.
It's so easy to say no, especially after the 2 years we've been through. So mm-hmm. start small. Like, is there a business contact, one business contact and one friend that you haven't texted in a while? Shoot them a text. You know, is there someone that you can go see coffee for? So I'm thinking about my colleagues I used to work with at DocuSign, and I'm going for WalkMe. That's the software company I work at now. I'm going to a big event on the 29th, and I'm thinking, how can I fill my morning with coffees with DocuSign people, right? It's so important to keep that network alive. My best friend Keith always talks about window time, right? So every time the guy gets in the car, if he's not talking to a customer, and I try and do this now too, he calls me or calls one of his friends. Hey, yeah. How you doing?
I call people when I'm in the car all the time. I do like to kill time that way, especially if they're really long drives. I think it's nice.
Keep you awake behind the wheel as well.
Yeah.
All right. This next one is controversial, and it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking. Maybe it's groundbreaking, but it's just, I certainly have lived my life this way for a long time, and I try and offset things, but it's, you can't outwork a poor diet. Quotes, I say, if I pig out, I can just work it off, right? Wrong. So where is this coming from? There's a wonderful book that explains all of this very well. It's by a PhD named Dr. Herman Ponser. He's an anthropologist that's specialized in metabolism. And he's got a ton of research, a ton of work, and he's been working in the field for a really long time, worked with many different species, including hunter-gatherer societies that are still intact in Africa. And he has, I don't know if Herman's established it or he's just popularizing it or bringing it to light, is the idea of the constrained energy theory of metabolism, which is different from what he refers to as the armchair energy theory. The armchair energy theory is energy in, energy out, that's it. It's that simple. The constrained energy theory suggests energy in, energy out is important, and that's the fundamental equation that governs weight gain and weight loss, but there's another twist to it. The body's will to maintain homeostasis means that our body strives to burn a set number of calories in a day. And actually, Herman talks a little bit about the body can only absorb so many calories in a day, but that amount exceeds what we can burn. So what does that mean? Well, if I go have a 1,000-calorie workout and my body's set point is 3,500 calories, that means that it only has 2,500 other calories to fulfill all the other energy needs of the body for that day. So locomotion, non-exercise activity, thermogenesis, like tapping the foot, moving your eyes, fidgeting, all those things that our body does that actually consumes energy. Thinking, the brain consumes a ton of energy. bodily processes which consume a ton of energy, your liver filtering, your kidneys filtering,
digestive system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Reproduction, immune system, especially in cold and flu season. And so maybe on a day-to-day basis or one time, yeah, you can kind of burn out those calories. You can kind of have a beneficial impact of a big workout. But very quickly, the body over a week, over 2 weeks, over 3 weeks, over months, it adapts. It says, cool. So you're going to go work out for 1,000 calories a day. I'm going to downregulate some other systems. And this is interesting. When we look at the data, you see there's a U-shaped curve of illnesses, like up, and they refer to them as upper respiratory tract infections. So head colds, those sorts of lung, chest colds, like COVID would be a great example. There's a higher instance of severity and occurrence in very elite athletes that are taking their bodies to the limits all the time. The body downregulates other systems.
Yeah, I think people get confused that if people are, obviously they're super fit, they're training so often and their bodies are adapting to be able to endure these types of fitness events. But does it necessarily mean that they're the healthiest human being on the inside, or what's going on all the other processes in their body? Not necessarily. It's the same thing with bodybuilding or any sort of extreme sports. For the most part, going to the extremes is actually going to be a little bit more detrimental in a majority of the areas of your life. But for the most part, they're short-lived too, right? These people are training for short periods of time to achieve a goal, and then they take some time off. But if they're not recovering well, then for sure it can have some lasting effects.
We had a really good chat about this in our WhatsApp chat the other day, and I borrowed from the NCI, the founders of the NCI, this idea of this triangle, which it talks a little bit about. In the middle is our intention, our focus, right? Where we direct our energy from a sort of a health and wellness standpoint. And then the triangle surrounds that circle. And at each point is it kind of a different goal, right? On one point, it's body transformation, being as lean as I possibly can, getting my body fat low, aesthetics, right? Another point is performance in sport, right? And which requires a lot of physicality, a lot of strength, and sort of the right conditions to really bring that performance. And then on the other side of the triangle, the third point is longevity, is vitality, is living well. And the reality is, as we shift that circle closer to one of those points, it makes the other, achieving what's in the other two points, more difficult, right? And so if we're pushing to that performance limit, if we're training super hard, it impacts the longevity, right? Mm-hmm. If we're trying to be super lean and we're in a huge deficit, we might find that our energy performance goes down, right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing applies here. And so does this mean all hope is lost? Does this mean, well, I guess there's no point in working it hard? That's not what it means at all. It means we need to manage our training volume. It means we need to understand that we need to use the right tools for the right outcomes that we want. I mentioned in the article, I used the analogy, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If my solution to maintaining my weight is super hard workouts day in and day out, and I try and apply that to weight loss, to injury prevention, to everything, it's not going to work out too well for me. So yes, you should still do cardio workouts. Yes, you should still have hard workouts, but maybe not 7 days of the week, right? Maybe one or 2 days of the week.
And they certainly shouldn't be in an effort to combat the wrong amount of calories for you, or just the excess of calories, or just like you were saying, you can't outwork or out train a bad diet. Yeah. So if you are snacking or eating things that you shouldn't be, and you're like, well, I work out so much, but you're also wondering why you're not feeling as good as you could or seeing the results, obviously this is a huge factor as well.
The crappy thing is but it does get easier, is you have to reduce your caloric intake. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned this in a post to our members today, but when you were training for your bodybuilding show, you were blown away by, you felt a little hungry at times, mm-hmm. but you're like, man, my Oura Ring scores are like world-class. Like, I've never seen my heart rate variability respond so well. I've never seen my deep sleep this high. Your body was telling you something. It's like, Andy, like, you don't need to overconsume calories.
Yeah.
Like, this is a good level.
A lot of it is habitual, right? We're just like, well, this time of day, I normally have something, or like, you know, you have an afternoon sort of slump in your energy and you feel that warrants food or more caffeine or whatever it is, the things that you would just normally
I'm
have.
So bad for like snacking between meetings. I get out, I go to the fridge, especially working from home, and I pop in like, you know, some healthy Brooksides. There's these healthy Brooksides now out there. They're not called Brooksides. They're a little less sweet, but they still have the same impact.
Yeah.
Watch out.
But obviously even healthy snacks and treats that you buy in a package are easy to overconsume. So it's still better than, it's still like a step in the right direction. You're still probably going to be consuming better quality ingredients and less calories, but it's still easy to overconsume. Sometimes it's like, well, it's so little calories, I might as well have more. So there's a lot to remember. And honestly, you know, I want to point out that the metabolism is a very complex system that, even though this guy's an expert in it, Ponser, I'm sure he still only understands like 5% of it.
He's still asking questions, 100%, and he acknowledges that. And that's why this is called universal near truth. It's not the truth.
No, yeah. But I think that what's important is that people during challenges, we're talking about this right now in our challenge, you might fill out a little form and it tells you, it pushes out some numbers of the amount of calories it thinks you should consume.
Exactly.
And then you follow that and nothing's really changing. You have to understand that your metabolism is obviously not, whatever they have estimated is not accurate. Well, Lane, so you're going to have to figure out what that is for you.
Lane Norton talks about it in that recent podcast on the Huberman podcast. And I know you were like, I don't know if I want our members to listen to this because Lane's Lane and whatever. He does a good job, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, but what he says is like, sure, on the surface, it is an energy in, energy out equation. But when you actually look at the detail, that is a very complex equation. And everything that goes into each aspect of that equation, there's like
huge
so many
variability.
And, you know, when you think of what a calorie is, it really is just a measure of energy. It's the, gosh, I don't know what the actual math is on this, but a certain temperature required or a certain amount of energy to boil a certain volume of water, I think, which I don't know all the volumes properly, but nonetheless, calories are energy, right?
And that's why they say you're burning calories, right? It's literally like...
So when we think, like Andy said, this is very complex, there's some volume knobs. Those volume knobs impact your ability, that energy that you're able to burn in a day, right? So we've always talked about hormones, thyroid hormone, like that's a thing. Doesn't mean that the energy in energy out doesn't matter. It means it's a volume knob that can sort of change one's metabolism. Likewise, a good volume knob is more muscle mass. Why? Because the one thing that can drive that daily energy expenditure up is improving or increasing lean body mass to a healthy level. So if you improve or add lean body mass, your BMR or sort of that energy expenditure during the day is going to go up. And so therefore you have a little more forgiveness with caloric intake.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to like side note, sidebar that if you are adding more muscle and you're like looking at a scanner like we have at F45 and you see there's a muscle increase, that's great. Your weight's mostly been staying the same, but the body fat isn't changing that much, but it is going down. That is a great sign that if you stayed on that course, you'd probably make really good changes in the long run. But you also do need to understand where you're starting from when you are trying to build muscle. Because if the first and foremost, the most important reason for your health is maybe losing body fat first, you do need to address that first sometimes.
Make a priority. Yeah. And strength training is part of that. That's not to say that, you know, we shouldn't be strength training. It just means that that is the priority, which means we need to manage our intake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just worth repeating sometimes because we do talk about muscle mass a lot at the studio. And it is important. It is one of the best things that you can do and focus on rather than just, you know, over cardioing everything and just assuming that that burns more calories and that's the most important thing. But sometimes we can also sway too much in the one direction and people focus on something too much that they're like, well, if I then to build muscle, I need more protein, I need to eat more. And then they're maybe consuming far too much protein and far too much calories sometimes because of the message
hey team,
that we're saying.
Andy here. Did you know that magnesium is one of the most important minerals for all aspects of health? It participates in over 600 different biochemical reactions in your body. Yet over 80% of the population don't get the minimum amounts of magnesium from their diet alone. That's mostly because our soil is lacking in it. Magnesium deficiency can increase all disease risks and keep you from performing optimally.
Bioptimizers Magnesium Breakthrough has 7 different types of magnesium in one capsule. This is very rare to find. Most have just one, maybe two, and they all have different roles to play in the body.
We take this every single night before we go to bed to enhance our muscle recovery and increase our deep sleep. To give this breakthrough formula a try, go to www.bioptimizers.com and use the code COACHANDY at checkout for 10% off.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we want people building muscle. It's a very healthy behavior. And you should always be thinking about doing that, meaning you should always be doing your strength training. You should always be hitting your protein targets. But if we have to prioritize certain things, making sure we get to a healthy body fat percentage level should be at the top of that list with building muscle shortly thereafter. So if you were to say, like, okay, for a male, if a male's coming in at 30% body fat and they're saying, hey, I just want to build muscle, are we getting ready for a powerlifting competition? Why are we so obsessed with building muscle? Well, because it's just what I want to do. Is there any kind of external reason to be building that much muscle, making that the priority? No, I just want to be more muscular. Okay, but we're at 30% body fat. I'm going to recommend we focus on bringing that down to 20% and then shift the priority back up to that muscle building goal, right? Mm-hmm. If you're sitting at about 10% body fat and you're saying, hey man, I really want to build some muscle, awesome. Let's get those calories up because we, to a reasonable level, not mm-hmm. to 5,000 calories, like we're talking a 300 to 400 maybe increase per day, but let's get those calories up so we can go build that muscle because our body fat is in a healthy state. And because when it's not, there's a whole host of other health problems. We know that obesity is one of the leading causes of all-cause mortality. It is the gateway to many other metabolic diseases. And so we have to address the obesity piece first.
Yeah.
Always.
Exactly.
All right. Moving on. Whole foods reign supreme. So we've sort of talked a little bit about this before. But the reality is, whole foods contain a lot of healthful components. Number one, they're very nutrient dense. Number two, they have fiber in them. And fiber actually creates it gives our stool sustenance, but it also creates a nice net in our digestive system when we're absorbing and eat other foods. So like, let's say I'm having an orange, it has fiber in it. A lot of those sugars aren't going to be able to get through that net into my bloodstream, as opposed to processed foods that take all the fiber out. All my digestive system is getting is sugar, and it has a free gateway right into my blood. And this is why processed foods tend to drive the blood sugar way up. Whole foods also make you feel more full, which is great. When I feel more full, I tend to consume fewer calories. So all of these things are great reasons why whole foods make sense. And the reality is, guys, like Andy and I talk, and Andy's going to go on about this in a minute because she's super passionate here, but we read all of the books. We dig in on vegan diets, right? We're trying to be very agnostic to understand where's the value in each of these opportunities. And what we really love is when we can circle similarities. And that's what this article is all about, right? The 9 universal truths. Circle similarities. And it always comes out of the wash. Whole foods, whole foods, whole foods, whole foods. Cook at home.
Yeah, I mean, that convergence of evidence, as you say. When I did my first nutrition certification back in 2014, they had a lot of speakers come in and lecture essentially their version of what they believe is the best diet, because everybody has a story of what the best diet is. But the problem with this is that they're speaking on their own behalf, that in their own experiences, anecdotal experiences, and they don't understand what's going on in other people's bodies. Although there can be a reason to dig into a certain type of diet if you have a similar type of issue that this person had. Like maybe, for instance, I've heard of the, you know, skin irritations and gluten. Like if you know that you have certain symptoms, you might find that that works for you. But what I definitely understood from listening to all of those lectures that all swore by the type of diet, name it, they had it, vegan, paleo, keto, you know, just nutrient dense. One guy was just obsessed with superfoods and just made the most disgusting looking smoothies I've ever seen. But all of them basically had the same components of whole foods. It was cooking all of your meals at home. None of them said, oh yeah, all I did was go to Subway and eat Subway sandwiches like Jared. Like nobody said that. So no surprise there. It has nothing to do with going out to eat and eating at your favorite restaurants and just choosing the right things all the time. I hate to tell you, but eating out is definitely not going to be a strategy. So if you have to eat out for work for lunch every single day or breakfast and you're on the go and you're getting muffins and coffees and stuff like that, you're already, you know, not doing it right. And it's hard to say it like that, but it's so important to get back to the necessity of cooking and preparing our own foods, because it's the healthiest thing that you can do. And for sure, it's going to impact your life in ways you wouldn't even imagine from a mental health perspective as well.
Yeah, totally. Like if I have a cookie, when you bring me those cookies, when you're so nice to bring a cookie home for me, it's me even. I have a 2 p.m. crash every time because it comes home around noon. I didn't have my second coffee today. I just realized that. That's really disappointing. But and I feel great. I'm going to have a great sleep now. But anyways, I didn't have any 2 p.m. crash, right? So it's crazy what that can do to us. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, right? Like, let me go on the record. Whole Foods, the grocery store, is in it to make profits. I'm not saying they're in it to hurt people, but as a business, they need to make profits to be successful. Producers, farmers of Whole Food, like that provide Whole Foods, they need to make a profit to stay in business. So what I'm about to say doesn't mean that these other places aren't making profits, but we know when it comes to processed foods that the goal is to get you to eat more, to buy more. Same with the restaurants. Gotta taste good. So it
might be cheaper at first.
We love going to restaurants, Andy and I.
Yeah.
We do our best to rein it in when we've gone to them too often, right? Because we understand that, you know, the goal is for us to have the desserts, to eat more and more. And we know that we can't track what's actually going into the food and the impact that's going to have on us.
And it's almost always cooked in oils that are pro-inflammatory. So it's if you ask, and I've seen a guy do this on Instagram before, he went to all these restaurants and asked, like, he's like, hey, and I guess he kind of made it up. I have an allergy towards canola oil or safflower oil. Like, what do you cook everything in? Everywhere he went, it was canola oil, safflower, vegetable oil, which is all pro-inflammatory fat. So even if you're having what looks like the healthiest meal ever at a restaurant, it's been cooked in fats that are less desirable and could still cause issues in the long run. I mean, it's a little bit debatable, but it's still, we know that the healthy fats, the good ones are going to be, you know, your olive oils, your avocado oils, and from the ones from fish and nuts. You want to stick with those, and you're eating those whole food sources at home yourself. And when you cook at home yourself, you get to control the ingredients. And honestly, you get to make food that's probably more calorie dense than you would even imagine. And it's about
calorie
double.
Calorie dense or nutrient dense?
Calorie dense, because if you think about, if I made the most calorie dense meal that I could at home, it's probably still only going to be like 800 calories.
Right.
If a restaurant does it, it's going to be double that. Easily, because of the way that they, the types of oils that they use and how much that they just want it to taste as good as possible. But if you really think about what they're using and how unnecessary it is, or you wouldn't even know what's going into your foods until you actually looked into how they cook and prepare it.
Right. The other thing I was going to say about restaurants, sorry, one last thing, and this is true. I think it's about 25%. They're allowed to be 25% off. And sort of if you go to like Chipotle and they're like, yeah, this is a 600 calorie burrito.
That's with anything. That's with any labeling.
Any so labeling.
Any labeling whatsoever. It could be up to 25% off.
So you could be consuming 25% more calories than you think.
Right. So to,
or fewer.
To trust the calories that are listed on any packaged food, being like, oh, this is a health food and I'm sure it's a little bit better, it could still be off. Now, if you made this, you know, a snack for yourself with all whole food ingredients, you would know exactly what went into it and you can control that. So when it comes down to it, I'm passionate about this because I feel that there is a lack of interest in cooking our own meals at home.
It. Preach.
And
I'm lucky to have you, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that I'd be doing so
well. I do love to cook.
It's difficult.
So I know it's hard. Like, I feel like I'm on my high horse because I love to cook, but I didn't necessarily always. I had to learn how to because I lived on my own and you just develop those skills. And then I know at some point we get a little bit lazy. We all do. And we're like, we eat out all the time. I did for a majority of my 20s as well until I did my nutrition course.
But you know the impacts.
And then when I learned all of that, I'm like, oh gosh, how could you not want to prepare all of these like these foods at home for yourself when you know how nutritious they are? And it does not have to be complicated. It does not have to be daunting or strenuous or anything that you're thinking about. People often think that it has to be this gourmet meal and that what do I do with this chicken breast? It's like you just put the whatever spices you want on it and pair it with a vegetable that you like.
Yeah.
You know, it does not have to be. But then you could also look up amazing recipes that are so simple online.
How many people feed their dog a ton of processed food? Probably none of you guys if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure. So think about yourself, like your body, your vehicle to navigate this world. It's time to have some self-love, love ourselves like we love our pets and feed ourselves that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Moving on, because we got Bachelor in Paradise coming up. We got to make sure we're off of this by 8 o'clock.
I know.
Manifesting positive. Nope, you skipped one there.
Did I?
Yeah, you did.
Oh.
Being proactive about your health is true health care. Using medicine to overcome symptoms is sick care. So, disclaimer, I have no beef with sick care. I have no beef with traditional Western medicine. Without it, we would not be here today. I would not be here today, most likely. So I think that, number one, I'm grateful for Western medicine. Number two, I know it's going to have a big role in my life as I go forward. And number three, I darn well want it when I'm in a situation where I really need it. And that's the key, when I really need it. Mm-hmm. Problem is, a lot of us, and we see this in our families, our own families, Amanda and I, and in our kind of us growing up, right? Not knowing any better. It was very easy to go grab the Advil if there was ever a hint of a headache or a hangover or whatever the case may be. That was the solution. Hey, I'm sick. I need to throw some medication down my throat to fix it. That might not always be the best thing. Healthcare is the idea of preparing ourselves for that inevitable outcome, is fortifying the body, is prioritizing health and wellness in it to strengthen the immune system, to have our natural mechanisms to ward off any of these viruses or bacteria or lessen the symptoms. More than that, it's taking a preventative approach to understanding all the levels of our hormones, micronutrients, and what's happening on our inside so that we can, before we even have a symptom, know that we're trending directionally correct or not directionally correct. So that, in my mind, is what healthcare is. And I think that as North American society, if we all start prioritizing this, we're going to have far better outcomes and need to use less sick care and thus have a longer health span.
Yeah, I mean, if I even think of sort of there's always like a negative side effect to a medication that's going to result in something that you didn't even expect, whereas that doesn't happen with natural alternatives and understanding why your body's going through what it's going through. So if it's just something like muscle soreness from a workout, you absolutely don't need to take anything, right? Like, you know, if you are wondering about inflammation, there are things that can help reduce inflammation that are natural components to a healthy diet, like fish and turmeric and things that you could cook with.
Turmeric candies, they make them at Fortino's.
Or you could take the supplements and they will help reduce, and magnesium, all these things will help reduce muscle soreness, but they also help with your body's ability to recover, which is why you're sore. If you're sick or you have a headache, like Justin said, you would think, you know, why am I feeling this way? Am I dehydrated? Or is there a cold coming on? But if the first choice is to take a medication and actually it destroys your gut lining and it leads to other sort of digestive issues, and it's kind of like a ripple effect in the wrong way. So you really want to make those choices carefully, because it could lead to other problems in the long run.
Yeah, we want to implore you guys to ask the question when faced with these circumstances, right? Non-high stakes circumstances, right? I mean, if we've got a serious infection, we need antibiotics.
Absolutely.
Right? We're lucky enough to live in a world where that's available. But do we need antibiotics all the time? If it's a very mild situation, it's under control, do we need the antibiotics? Understand the trade-offs. We know that prolonged use of antibiotics nuke the gut of all the healthy bacteria, and then you're in a situation where you have to rebuild that bacteria up over many months of nurturing and providing the gut with good prebiotic, probiotic sources of food, as well as probably some probiotic enzymes. So,
and who knows how long it'll actually take? I mean, you'll never actually know how long it is.
And all of a sudden, I have a digestive issue. Well, you probably don't. We just need to address the ecosystem within your gut.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You wouldn't know that it has something to do with that, but it absolutely can.
Especially NSAID, like Andy said, NSAID, like Advil, like prolonged use of those things over time will totally destroy the gut.
Yeah, so if antibiotics were a choice that you had taken, you don't know that it's actually leading to brain fog or gut dysbiosis or lack of immunity. I mean, they say 80% of your immune system resides in your gut. So if you destroy your gut and strip it of all of its good bacteria and bad, but we're still looking for that healthy balance, then you might have more instances where you're becoming sick more often, and then you're taking more NSAIDs and you're taking more medications. It's like I said, it can be a sort of domino effect.
And we want to be very careful. We're not medical doctors, right? We're not asking you to put yourselves or your children at risk here by not taking antibiotics when they're needed. We're asking you to ask the question. We're asking you to consider, mm-hmm. is this a scenario where this is required? Ask that extra question, because I understand that there are trade-offs that are known to this stuff.
Yeah.
This one's fun. Manifesting positive outcomes is a real thing. Absolutely it is. And when we look around us and we see all the entrepreneurs that they're writing about in the media, and whether it's Silicon Valley or otherwise, they have some sort of meditation practice. And it seems very frou-frou, actually less so these days. I think everyone's sort of buying into the idea of meditation or breathing, Wim Hof type stuff. But this idea of trying to become present and imagine positive outcomes. We've had some pretty good experiences with this with our real estate. Our personal real estate, not mm-hmm. that we're real estate moguls, but our homes that we are primary residences, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting when we really hone in on just like feeling the feelings of achieving the outcome, and, you know, using visualization is probably one of my favorite tools. And I like to do this even while I'm walking the dog. Sometimes listening to some nice music, like a walking meditation sometimes works for me better in a visualization standpoint too, because I'm just not distracted at all. And I like to be outside breathing clean air, and it's just a really nice environment to do it. So if you haven't been able to sit down, take the time, try it while you're on a walk and see how it goes, and visualize those things that you want to achieve and feel the feelings of achieving it now. It has to feel like it's happening and that you're in that state.
Yeah, physically you need to feel it. Like, it's like when you're meditating with breathing and you're trying to focus on the point of your nose or your knee or breathing into different areas, you're trying to actually feel the sensation. And it's kind of like what we talked about with diets. It's like the best diet's the one you can adhere to. The best mindfulness training is the one you could adhere to. Andy likes going for nature walks and sort of being very present. I like doing that with Bowie too. When I take Bowie for a walk and I'm having a conversation with her, and she has a better time because mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, thanks for not being on your phone, dude. And one of the things I love to do, like Andy said, is close my eyes, whether it's with Andy or by myself, and just visualize that feeling, whether it's something to do with wealth, whether it's something to do with future family, whether it's deals in my sales career at the end of the year and sort of processes, really feel that. And that's just a wonderful way to start your day and sort of carry that good energy and good vibes with you. But it's all about that feeling. That's the key. Not about, you know, you can visualize as best as possible, but while you're visualizing, you need to have the sensation. All right. Mm-hmm. Now this one. This one could take a while, but let's see if we can be concise. You know, it's a challenge for us.
The last two.
Sleep is the biggest rock.
I think you skipped one. You did.
It's okay. We'll get back to it.
Oh, okay.
Sleep is the biggest rock, and boy, is quality sleep sensitive. When I say biggest rock, I mean like the biggest factor in health. Mm-hmm. Before you go get medication, I mean, again, if it's a highly infectious, like progressive situation, go to the emergency, get medication, mm-hmm. please. But if we're kind of feeling off, and, you know, whether it's cold flu season or whether it's hard workouts and like we feel ourselves slipping down, the first thing to do is stop what you're doing and go nap, or go prioritize having a great night's sleep. Our bodies, our brains do the cleanup repair work while we're sleeping, and we should all be striving for 6 to 8 hours. As we age, it's apparently we need less and less, but again, that's bio individual for sure. Andy sleeps more than me. If I go to bed at 8, I wake up at like 4. It sucks. I don't know what that is. I like will not get more than 6 hours of sleep. Yeah. Although I got 7 last night. But what we want to be striving for is good quality, meaning it shouldn't all be light sleep where we're waking up, right? We want to be striving for deep and REM sleep.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention that 6 to 8 hours is the total amount of actual sleep,
right?
Not like I went to bed at 10 o'clock and woke up at 6, so there's my 8 hours.
Right.
No, that's probably more like, you know, good quality sleep. Like the amount of times that you toss and turn is actually moments that you're awake more than you think, and how long you are actually spending in deep sleep compared to REM sleep compared to light sleep impacts how much good quality sleep you actually had. So an 8 hours of being in bed does not equal 8 hours of sleep. So the only way to really understand that is if you use a tracker. But I think it's important to know if you're not going to use a tracker, that that means you might need more sleep than you think.
So I'll give, yeah, that's a great point, Andy. So I'll give you guys some tips. I think I measured this recently, so I'm glad you brought it up. And it was like 45 minutes. So if I slept for 7 hours, I got 6 hours and 15 minutes. And I actually saw this pretty consistently. Like, and so I don't think it was an Oura Ring effect, because my Oura Ring is never 100% consistent, meaning it actually is listening to what's happening. It's not like, oh, this is Justin, we know how he typically sleeps. No, it's paying attention.
So yeah, I'd say on average, mine usually says that I was awake for about an hour and 15 or an hour and a half, whatever it is. If it's a really bad night, it'd be an hour and a half.
Well, it's
because
I get up to work out and it screws your sleep up. So yeah. There's that.
So if you think about on average, there's like, you want to add an extra hour to whatever you're getting to get that full total.
So here's some things. Your deep sleep, this is just for you guys to know, your deep sleep is going to happen earlier in the night. So if you're getting to bed super late, like 2 a.m. kind of stuff, you're probably missing on your deep sleep.
Even midnight.
Yeah, but like nonetheless, like it's happening in the earlier stages of the night, earlier stages of your sleep. To get deep sleep, you want your room at a cool temperature, slightly below room. So even in the winter, whether we're cracking a window, we have a fan on, we have these things called Oolers that we invested in. It was not cheap, but I think it's worth it because, again, we spend a third of our life sleeping. So they're little, they're like sheets that go under our sheets and they circulate water at a cool temperature.
It's like little tubes that are going through it, and then they have water going through it.
They help us keep that cool body temperature. Now Bowie screws that up, but you know, that's for another podcast. The other thing we do is we try and block blue light out. So actually Andy found these amazing blue blocking glasses called RA Optics. So we used to use, what was it? Blue blockers we used to use.
No, True Dark.
True Dark. And they were just so dark, the red ones. We couldn't even function in the house. But these ones we wear from like 6 o'clock onwards, and they're amazing. And it's funny, when you take them off, it's like jumping from a hot to a cold tub. You see so much blue.
And it's so insane. Bright. Like it doesn't, it's not even like that they're that dark, but it tinges like the lights in your house enough that you'll feel like, oh, I'm feeling like I'm winding down more. You don't realize how stimulating the bright lights in your house are, even if they're not necessarily blue lights from TVs or phone screens, which we all know we should try to avoid before sleep. But even just the brightness of all the lights in your house, like tone it down, make sure that you're getting ready for that like nighttime feel. Like everything should be low lit, warm amber tones, those kinds of things. Yeah. So you can actually get into the modes of sleep sooner.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. She talked about measuring your sleep, so do that if you can. We love the Oura Ring. It is expensive, but again, I think it's worth it. Like I actually just invested in, I can't believe how much pillows cost, by the way. I'm a little pissed off about that. But nonetheless, I invested in a new pillow because I was sleeping on my back, and my back sleeping pillow had a little like cutout in it by design where like I could sink my head into it. But I was waking up with QL pain every day. Like I couldn't even put my socks on. Since I've been sleeping on my side, I have this incredible, like I have no back pain. And I'm getting way better sleeps, right? So sleeping on your side apparently is good for you digestively as well. Sleeping on your stomach is the worst.
Yeah.
And I know we all have our individual preferences there. And of course, if you're pregnant, absolutely, you kind of have to sleep on your back.
No, you don't. You're supposed to sleep on your side.
Okay. Yeah. What do I know? I am not certified to be teaching prenatal classes.
You can't be on your back for the majority of it, but that's okay.
Wait, you can't be on your back?
No, you actually shouldn't, because it presses down on the vagus nerve, and so that restricts blood flow. You could feel really lightheaded because of it. And honestly, women say that when they're that like really large and near the end, that they are really uncomfortable with the amount of pressure, like, you know, with all of that extra weight.
All right, there you go. Heartburn, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. This is one of my favorites. And Eric from Function 101 and Sam are going to love this one because we talked about this. And I'm probably going to feature Eric on this podcast soon because I think we can spend an hour on this next point. Mild pain is not permission to stop moving. If you're a little sore, it doesn't mean stop. If you have DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, doesn't mean don't go in for another workout. Now, am I saying do like German volume training squats and destroy your legs and then go do squats the next day? No, it's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying
is, no pain, no gain.
If your legs are sore, can you still go do a cardio workout? Can you still go for a walk? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It'd probably help you. So oftentimes we're sore because we're not moving enough, because we don't have strength through ranges of motion, because we're not lubricating our joints with synovial fluid, which is the natural lubricant of our joints that, guess what, causes that to start lubricating. pressure on the joint. So movement will actually, and that's why we warm up. That's part of the reason. Mm-hmm. So we can get our joints lubricated, not just the heart rate up, right? So it's very important that we understand that we were designed and built to move. Actually, like when you think about how our body's designed, that our feet, the arches, the springiness of our feet to traverse long, long distances all day long in an upright position. We're built for it, for core engagement. So your body gets sick when it does not move. So if your pain is below a 4.0 on the 10-point scale, you got to get your butt in gear. You got to get moving. We've had so many F45, like ex-athletes come in that like have had chronic knee pain. I can think of a few examples specifically where they were doing physio and that was sort of working, but the physio recommended that they come to F45. And when they came to F45, their pain went away. Mm-hmm. They started training strength through these ranges of motion, functional ranges, and they were back on the ice and playing their best hockey with no pain.
Yeah, sometimes it really is, you know, the opposite of people just think, oh, if this hurts or if I'm sore from a long day of walking or whatever, I need to just rest. Well, sometimes the answer is actually just building more strength around the things that are hurting you after a long day's work, right?
Absolutely.
Working muscles are probably different than the ones that you'd be training in the gym, but they can also enhance how long or how you're feeling after a long day's work or even just coming to the gym and people are like, oh, but I think my knees are hurting, but they don't actually realize it's a tightness of your muscles too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are areas like even like tennis elbow and things like that. Some things are just from slight overuse, but also muscles being really tight and just you need to be working
pressure on nerves
them.
Too, right? When yeah. you start to get like, I was having that with my brachioradialis on my, so that's like tennis elbow muscle on my left side, not my tennis arm. And we believe after months and months of working on this, and now it's going away, that it had something to do with my nerves being constrained on my sort of the cervical vertebrae.
Yeah.
That then go down the brachioradialis muscle, right? So very interesting stuff, but movement, you know, helps solve all of these problems.
Yeah. I mean, if you have like if you're somebody who throws their neck out or their back out really often, it's not because you're overdoing or you're overusing it. It's usually just, you know, there are certain areas that you could stand to be stretching more in combination with strengthening, but it's not necessarily, I think people are like, oh, I can't do this movement because I'm afraid of throwing my neck out again. Like there is a balance of stretching to strengthening that would really benefit most people.
Yeah. Disclaimer. If you have significant acute, meaning pain out of nowhere, I'm not telling you go move,
yeah.
go see a doctor, go to Emerge, go see a physio, right? We're talking about that kind of persistent achy pain.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, another one of your favorites. God, these are good, eh? Understand yourself before investing in supplements. So we talk about this a lot. Understand what's going on the inside. Understand your levels. You are a bio individual. Don't go throwing all your money into supplements that could actually be harmful for you.
Yeah, you never know. In the wrong amounts, certain things could actually be, you know, depleting you of another nutrient. So minerals, for example, if you're over consuming
this is huge.
Zinc, you're going to be impacting your iron levels or
is that copper,
magnesium.
You mean? Zinc and copper?
Zinc and copper, yeah, work together as well. Mm-hmm. So, but also with iron. So zinc, copper, and iron are actually sort of like a three-legged stool in the sense that you want to keep in a really good balance. Copper, you don't need much of, but you do need just enough to balance out your zinc. So anyways, long story short, there are things that you should be
and vitamin D,
aware
right?
of. Yeah,
another one.
K2 vitamin D and, you know, how you're absorbing things. But also if it's not something like a mineral or a vitamin, it could be something that's like an herb that sounds really great for enhancing your sleep or cognitive function, but you want to make sure that one, it doesn't impact in any other medications that you might be taking. If you are, you know, planning to become pregnant, if you're taking prenatals, there are things that you need to be mindful of that you, if you should be taking or not. So always do a little bit of research, ask your naturopath or GPs may or may not have some information on some of those, you know, performance supplements or cognitive function supplements. So ask somebody like a naturopath that's going to give you a better perspective.
Totally. My favorite question I get a lot is about pre-workout. So again, it's getting close to Bachelor in Paradise time. I don't want to spend too much time here because I shouldn't need to. Pre-workouts suck. They don't make any sense. You should do something pre-workout with your nutrition, which we talk about a lot, but it should not be a marketed pre-workout.
No.
That probably costs way more than any other supplement, has the highest margins possible.
Yeah.
That's where supplement companies make their money, is on this kind of stuff that pre-workout explode. That's where they make their money. They don't make as much money on protein. Protein gets you in the store, but it's these things that really make them money. And I'm not saying they shouldn't make money. I'm not saying they're not doing good work, but I'm telling you that these pre-workouts are dangerous and the efficacy is low.
Yeah.
So, you know, be very mindful, go get yourself tested, understand where you're at, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, just, you know, don't be trying to combine fat burners with, you know, a pre-workout and hoping that, yeah, it's going to make that little bit of a difference every workout you do. Honestly, like, just sleeping well, having the right nutrients, vitamins and minerals, so getting your blood tested, like, those are going to make the biggest difference. So find that out first and figure out where you even need to spend your money. I always say that. Do your blood work, see where your deficiencies are, and then you have those supplements as part of your regime.
Yeah, here's your big rocks, guys, to summarize all this. If you're going to do any one of these things, that if you're not doing any of these things, the first one to start with is strength training, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you're not growing or you're not getting the results you want, ask yourself if you're sleeping enough. Sleep can throw way up. It can elevate your cravings like crazy as well.
I can't help but say that, you know, we work out once a day, but you eat several times a day. 100%. So whole foods and understanding how to eat better and looking into your nutrition probably has to be up there.
Okay, maybe we can rewrite, we can edit the article and say, if you're going to do anything, start with the whole foods.
Because mm-hmm. I think it's a ripple effect personally. Yeah. But
I mean, hey, look, I guess you're right. Like, if we were to approach a lay person that wasn't doing any of these things and you say, how do we help this person? Probably get them walking 10,000 steps a day and get them on whole foods. That'd mm-hmm. probably be the big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then address their sleep.
Yep.
And then we'd have them start strength training.
Yeah.
Before we start advocating for massive amounts of protein and everything like that as well.
Oh, totally.
Which comes shortly thereafter. Then yeah. Some blood work.
Because they'll feel better sooner because of just eating better and getting outside. Like, it really is like, wow, this is so great. And then it inspires them to do more. So I think that's the takeaway for me, is it's where people should start.
And you were the first one I heard say this, is like, or I don't know if it was you, but... Probably what, actually,
I'd like to take credit, whatever it is.
No, it's just that you don't know how good you can feel.
Yeah.
You really don't. I don't even know how good I can feel yet, but I'm telling you, I'm in the pursuit of it and I'm feeling better. I'm feeling younger. And Andy made a great comment about, like, how around movement, and I forgot to highlight this, around tension can lead to pain. All my knee pain has to do with quad tension, mm-hmm. not because my knees are broken or I have a bum knee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it comes and it goes based on if I'm recovering well, doing foam rolling, getting massage and stretching my legs.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Well, there you have it.
There you go. Just under 60 minutes.
There's the list.
Throw it on 1.5 speed. You guys have a fantastic day, evening, morning, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. We will see you shortly.